Pro Savings Days are back at Lowe's. MyLowe's Pro Rewards members save even more with limited-time doorbuster deals. Save $5 on 24-count Contractor's Choice 42-gallon trash bags, now just $14.78. Plus, get your choice select DeWalt Elite Series saw blades for $9.98. Not a Pro Rewards member? Join for free today at Lowe's. Valid through 9/17. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, loyalty programs subject to terms and conditions. See Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change.
Some days call for working up a sweat, working on your passion, and endless action. Ditch the glitch with Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Refreshing flavors like strawberry kiwi and blackberry lemonade. Scientifically formulated to support physical energy, hydration, focus, mood, and social stamina. Liquid IV's new Energy Multiplier Sugar-Free. Hydrating energy. Tap the banner to learn more.
There's a reason Chevy trucks are known for their dependability, because they show up no matter the weather, push forward no matter the terrain, and deliver. That's why Chevrolet has earned more dependability awards for trucks than any other brand in 2025, according to J.D. Power. Because in every Chevy truck, like every Chevy driver, dependability comes standard. Visit Chevy.com to learn more. Chevrolet received the highest total number of awards among all the trucks in the J.D. Power 2025 U.S. Vehicle Dependability Study. Awards based on 2022 models. Newer models may be shown. Visit jdpower.com/awards for more details. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
Popsicles, sprinklers, a cool breeze. Talk about refreshing. You know what else is refreshing this summer? A brand new phone with Verizon. Yep, get a new phone on any plan with Select Phone Trade-In and My Plan. And lock down a low price for 3 years on any plan with My Plan. This is a deal for everyone, whether you're a new or existing customer. Swing by Verizon today for our best phone deals. 3-year price guarantee applies to then current base monthly rate only. Additional terms and conditions apply for all offers.
So joining me here on the Tour Coach podcast, as well as video on YouTube, is the voice of golf, somebody I haven't talked to, and it's been a little bit. It's always a pleasure to run into him, always a pleasure to chat. And most people don't realize one of the first times I was ever interviewed on PGA Tour Radio after I had gone on with the Dew Sweeper show was by Peter Kessler, who's joining me. And I think of all the years, that's the most nervous I ever was before an interview. I'm normally pretty good at bullshitting. I was so nervous, Peter, coming on your show for the first time because of the voice of golf and all of your knowledge. And my old mentor, Hank Johnson, I'll never forget one of the things he said is, he said, "Now you're going on with Peter, don't screw it up." Right? And so joining me without further ado is Peter Kessler. Peter, how you doing? And thanks for taking the time.
Oh, I'm happy to be with you. It's funny you're bringing back a subject. The teaching shows that we did 700 of,
yes, you know,
when I was at the Golf Channel. And when we started that show in September of 1995, I was a 75 shooter. After we did a year's worth of shows, which would be about 100 shows, I could barely break 90. I had no swing thoughts. Actually, I had one swing thought when the show started, and then 6 months into it, I had a checklist that was so long you couldn't even get through it, through the whole swing. And it took me years to get all of that stuff out of my head. I mean, the best golf that you play is with the least amount of swing thoughts. You know, I remember you talking to Tiger about this, and you know, once he got over the golf ball, whether it was a putt or whether it was going to be some kind of a swing, that once he got himself to address, no more thinking aloud. He would take one last look at the target, and in his mind's eye, he would see the target throughout the swing, a swing he'd already decided to make in the thinking zone before he stepped into the playing zone. And I used to play golf like that, not to his level, obviously, but mine was very, very thought-free, very much about feel, especially the short game. And so, yeah, once I started that show, my game was history. It took years to get it back. And we had 400 teachers on the show over the 7 years. And I would prepare by reading everything about or written by every single teacher, just as I would on any other show that I hosted when I was there. And so I had lots of information for each show, but unfortunately, because I have a photographic memory, it never went away, and it just stacked up each one of those shows on top of each other until Jim McClain came in one night after a couple of years, and I said, I'm really having a lot of trouble. And he said, with your swing? And I said, yeah, take a look. And I made a swing and hit a ball in the net, and he thought I was kidding, that it wasn't really the swing that I had been using. So while my memories of the show are fantastic and the people that I spent time with are wonderful, what happened in my golf game was pretty much of a joke.
Well, I don't want to take you back to what happened to your golf game, but I've always been fascinated. In fact, I think I told you this one time over dinner when we had dinner in Orlando. When I first came on and started doing my radio show, that was just a local radio show at the time on the panhandle of Florida and then through Alabama. I based it on your TV show. I always thought it was great to spend time with other great teachers, or at that time, I mean, I'm not a great teacher. Nobody knew who the heck I was, and I was just trying to learn. But I to be able to spend an hour or 30 minutes or 15 minutes with these great teachers and then give people access to it was fascinating to me. And so you were a motivation. It was something that I always remembered that. And then when you asked me to come on the show, I was scared shitless. But as I was looking back on the stuff we put out now, it's like, I don't want to forget that. I don't want to forget what motivated me to do this, which was recounting episodes and, timeless lessons from great teachers that have come on, like with you on Golf Academy Live. So you had what'd you say? 400, how many teachers did you have on?
We had 400 different ones over, yep, 700 shows.
Jeez. Let's recount 8 or 10 of your favorite teachers and what you learned from them. If you don't mind, if you can pick 8 or 10, where would you start with? What was one of your favorites and what can we learn from?
Well, I mean, Butch, mm-hmm, Harmon stands out for many, many reasons. He was the first one, one of the first ones on the show. And Tiger and I started our career at exactly the same time in the mid-90s. So Tiger was also a frequent guest. Mm-hmm. And so much of what they taught and what they felt during their golf swings never went away. And in Tiger's case, it was exactly what I said a few moments ago, that if you were to say to Tiger when he's got the putter behind the ball, just about to pull it back, and say to him, what are you thinking right now? He would say, nothing. It's about the feeling that I want to reproduce during the stroke. That's all it is. It's about the feeling. And Butch kept it very, very simple as well. Mm-hmm. He was one for drills to reinforce your biggest flaw. But he knew if you would get that one drill right, that it would take care of eight or 10 other things in your swing that needed fixing. Give you an example. If you're with the student and you tell them, this swing, I want you to just think about making sure that you finish your swing with your torso left of the target, your arms completely swung all the way around and through and balanced securely on your lead or left foot for most golfers and up on your right toe. If you just think about finishing in what's a perfect position, fully balanced, your torso left of the target, because at the target's not quite done yet, you got to keep going, then so many good things will have happened automatically in your, mm-hmm, swing. And I still believe in that philosophy. I'll offer you up a criticism of another teacher who wouldn't do that with Tiger, and that was Hank Haney. Now, when Butch and Tiger ended their relationship for personal reasons unrelated to his golf game, because I was maybe the best golf swing that anybody's ever had is the one that he had with Butch, you know, particularly towards the end of 99 and in all the 2000. And so
hard to argue
one that they rebuilt starting after the 97 Masters, because Tiger felt that when he won the Masters in 97, that too much of it was built on timing the shot with his hands. And he wanted to take that out of it. And that was what he and Butch worked on until he got into the spring of 99 and called Butch from the driving range of the Byron Nelson Classic and said, I've got it. And then he won everything, and then he won everything by 100 shots. And so when Hank and Tiger became a team, I was really disappointed, and still disappointed to this day, that Hank, instead of saying to Tiger, look, you've got the perfect golf swing. It's the best golf swing. It doesn't misfire. I understand you and Butch had some issues on a personal level, but what I'd really like to do is to be your eyes and just watch you hit and watch you play and tell you if I see anything that deviates from the perfection that you've been enjoying in the previous relationship that you had with Butch. But he didn't do that. He wanted him to have Hank Haney swing. There was no Hank Haney swing. He had worked with Mark O'Meara, who was shorter and stockier, and his swing was much flatter and much more around. It was a completely different golf swing. But Tiger could win with anybody's golf swing. He could win with the 30 handicapper that you just taught an hour ago. I mean, Tiger was going to be able to be Tiger no matter what input he was getting, because his insides knew exactly how to make a golf swing that, when you get it all aligned at impact, was all going to be perfect. And in a lot of cases, what preceded it didn't matter as long as you get into the delivery position correctly, make impact correctly, and then everything turns around and to the left, and your arms swing up into a neutral three-quarter position. And it was amazing to me that Tiger was able to, through other teachers that he would see subsequently, that he basically, until injuries, you know, took his ability away, to make that swing over and over again, his swing from 2000. And, you know, and then things started to break down. And of course, he had that great farewell finish, winning the Masters in 2019, 11 years between majors, and just like Rory was 11 years between majors. But I don't believe, given all of the hubbub about Rory, that he's anywhere near Tiger's class. I don't even think he's the best player of his time. Rory had his career from 2010 to 2015 when he won four majors and lots of tournaments and players of the year and in America and in Europe. And then it was like he went on vacation in terms of Rory's best playing from 2014 and still working on. And he's so talented. Crazy. With one huge advantage over everybody else in the field, and that is his ability to drive the golf ball longer and straighter than anybody ever has. He hit driver and 7-iron into the 18th hole at Pebble. Remember when Tiger hit driver 3-wood sliced out over the ocean onto the 18th green? The equipment is completely out of control. It goes 60 yards too far off the tee. Phil Mickelson in his mid-50s is 60 yards longer now in his mid-50s with his driver than he was in his late 20s. And so that's why I always look forward to the Masters and did this year and was hoping Rory would put together his slam, because at least they could buy up more land. And even then, the whole thing was completely insane, because he hit driver 7-iron in the 15. You know, Jack had to hit 4-iron, into 15, where Rory hit 7-iron. It's like baseball. A big home run to center field is 450 feet. What if the ball went 900 feet? You would never see it if somebody hit a home run. it would get out of the stadium so quickly that nobody would ever see it at any point in time, which is why watching golf on TV now is a situation where a man stands on a tee, makes a swing with a driver, you never see the golf ball. You get a line that goes to the right in red. You get a line that goes to the left in red. And then you get a rectangle that says target. That's simulator golf. And the guys who run the USGA and the RNA and the PGA Tour are not rolling the ball back. And so there's no more mid-iron shots in golf anymore. There's no five irons from awkward angles like, you know, Seve used to have, or Tiger used to have when he had the Haney swing, or Mickelson used to have regularly. There would have been no Walter Hagen. There wouldn't have been an Arnold Palmer. And it's the one shot in golf that the recreational player can't hit. The five iron from the awkward angle out of the field of play just before the trees over the wrong bunker on the green that slopes away and that's going in the wrong direction. That shot doesn't exist in golf anymore. Everything's drive to the fringe and chip. Everything's drive, and you have 100 yards on average for the whole year. Last point on that. Dustin Johnson, before he went crazy and joined the crazy tour, had one season where he averaged 88 yards in approach shots for an entire year, including all the golf tournaments. And only once did he hit a club longer than a 7-iron into a par 3 or a par 4. And it was a 6-iron, which he called a long iron. So I miss the games that used to be taught by the teachers who were on the shows, because it was equipment that fit the field of play, unlike today.
Don't disagree with most all of that. Let's go to another. Pick me another teacher, somebody else you had on, something, a memory of a great teacher and something you learned and that you like.
Well,
I love the Butch. I still see the Butch stuff. People still repost that. I've been fortunate enough to go out a few times and hang out and watch those old videos, and it's special. So, but who else?
Well, okay, let's pick somebody significantly more obscure in terms of the subject we're on now, and that would be Paul Runyon.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Paul won the 1934 PGA Championship over Craig Wood, who had been his boss, and Craig Wood hit it 70 or 80 yards farther than Paul Runyon, but Paul Runyon was so amazing around the greens that he got him into a playoff and then beat him in the 36 holes the next day. In 1938, Paul Runyon beat Sam Snead, who outdrove him by almost 100 yards. He beat him 8-7 in the 36-hole match. You know, and Sam said, and, you know, it's on my Instagram channel and YouTube channel, The Voice of Golf with No Spaces, a conversation between Sam and Paul talking about that 38 PGA, and Sam saying they didn't call you little poison for nothing. He said every time you were around a green, no matter what the lie was, no matter what the situation was, you always got the ball in the hole in two strokes, and sometimes you didn't even need to do anything on the second stroke except tap it in. And Paul started to talk about his methodology of dealing with the 30-yard pitch, which every one of your students has on almost every single hole that they play every day. They're all terrible. Everybody shoots 95. So what does that mean? It means you get a ball somewhere off the tee. You get a ball somewhere up around the green, but it's always 30 yards. And they always try to hit a club into the green that they know they can't hit and hold the green with. And so the approach that they hit ends up in the worst possible angle, in a greenside bunker on the far right or left with a downhill side hill lie, or it's over the green in a place you can't play from. So one thing that Paul said was, when you know you can't hit the green in two with 90% certainty, you lay it up short of the front bunkers. How far in front? 30 yards in front. So you have to learn to hit the 30-yard pitch. Well, what does that mean? That means that you still have to make a turn. And how do you make the turn? And Paul said, and Sam 100% agreed with him, because Sam taught me this 51 years ago at Riviera when he came down to the last hole tied with Dave Stockton for the title. And Sam made a bogey on the last hole, and Dave Stockton hit the 230-yard three-wood into the green 8 feet from the hole from the worst, in terms of elevation change, way below his feet, but it was teed up. I was there. I was living in L.A. at the time, and I watched the shot. And Sam taught me, he asked me a night that I went to the range every night that week, and Sam said, finally, what? And nobody ever went to the range in those days. Arnold was there. Jack was there. Harold Irwin is there. Tom Weisskopf, Tom Watson, like every single great player, Gary Player's, the LA Open. It was a great tournament in those days. And nobody was there to watch them. And I went down, and I was as crazy about golf then as I would be later. And so I sat behind Sam on the Monday night, and I watched him. And then on Tuesday, he started to talk to me, and he said, what kind of player are you? And I said, well, I'm about a 75 shooter. And he said, well, if you want to be any good, which I laughed at, he said, you have to learn to hit the 30-yard pitch. It's the most important shot in golf. He said, the third shot of any kind is the most important shot for a professional for his scorecard. The third shot, whatever it is, defines his score. And for the recreational player, it's the most important shot because he has it on every hole. And the only way to avoid hit making sixes and sevens is to be able to knock your shot onto the green in one stroke over regulation. And he said, so to do that, you still have to make a turn. So what does that mean? And both Paul Runyon said to me on TV and Sam Snead in person said, you put your left index finger on your belly button. You hold the club at address. Now start your swing. You turn your belly button 1 inch to the right, just like the key in the ignition of the car turns over the engine. If you just move the club away with your right hand in tandem with starting your belly button as slow as you can, as I'm doing now off camera, but you can see my motion in my shoulders, that I'm moving ever so gently from center to right. If you move it 1 inch with the club also moving in tandem, once you've moved a couple of inches, your weight is now on your right foot. Then you can swing your arms up. Then you allow them to drop down. And then when you feel everything at impact, because remember, it's a half a swing at half speed, once you've gotten impact, then and only then do you turn everything just the exact opposite. Turn the belly button 1 inch to the left. So now everything turns to the left and goes around and then up. Not forward, but around. It's a semicircle.
At Sierra, discover great deals on top brand workout gear, like high quality walking shoes, which might lead to another discovery.
40,000 steps, baby. Who's on top now, Karen?
You've taken the office step challenge a step too far. Don't worry, though. Sierra also has yoga gear. It might be a good place to find your zen. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
Eczema isn't always obvious, but it's real. And so is the relief from Ebglyss. After an initial dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Searching for real relief? Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILLY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
When did making plans get this complicated? It's time to streamline with WhatsApp, the secure messaging app that brings the whole group together. Use polls to settle dinner plans. Send event invites and pin messages so no one forgets mom's 60th. And never miss a meme or milestone. All protected with end-to-end encryption. It's time for WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone. Learn more at whatsapp.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Checking off the boxes on your to-do list is a great feeling. And when it comes to checking off coverage, a State Farm agent can help you choose an option that's right for you. Whether you prefer talking in person, on the phone, or using the award-winning app, it's nice knowing you have help finding coverage that best fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
The only way you can put your club on that semicircle is to turn that belly button 1 inch to the right as the club starts. The good news is the belly button's going to keep moving and everything else is as well. But if you just stand where you are right now, everybody, and just get into a dress position, imagine you're holding the club with the right hand or hold it, put your left index finger on your belly button, and as slow as you possibly can, move them both together for 1 inch. And once you do that, you've already moved over. Now, instead of just lifting your arms and having nothing, now you've moved. Now you can lift your arms up because you're going to be loaded and you'll have the sensation that all you need to do is allow the opposite to occur, that you let the arms fall down. And then when everything lines up again at the ball at impact, then you go ahead and turn everything through and around to the left. That's the best advice I've ever heard of any of the 400 teachers give. And in this case, not only Paul Runyon, not only Sam Snead, Tiger Woods, Nick Faldo, Seve Ballesteros. I went to see Seve in Spain in 2004 for Golf Magazine. Spent the weekend with him. Hit a million little chips and pitches. If we were chipping, then he would give me 3 feet. He would let me move my ball 3 feet closer to the hole when we were competing. And even if I hit one that looked absolutely perfect, he would know if I missed it slightly, and he'd say, "You can't fool me." He said, "I know you missed that ball." And so you're talking about five of the best players of all time, but yet nobody else dispenses that advice. And there's no other way for the recreational player to hit that pitch consistently unless you've moved some weight to the right and you just do it with your belly button. It's the smallest thing that you could possibly focus on, so it's the easiest thing to move. There's none of this hip stuff. There's none of this leading with the hip stuff. No good players do that. It happens to be the case that your lower body will release partway down when you're making a swing, but not because you tell it to, but because that's the reaction that it has to being in a good position prior. That's why finishing the golf swing in a full and balanced position lets you know that the things that occurred before that moment, you got them right. You did get over to your right side. You did go ahead and turn your torso, and then you had to turn your torso again back to the left. But once you practice that, and you do that for 30 days, you know, say every other day for 30 minutes, and just hit 30-yard pitches. Now, you want to hit them to a green where the ball can then run out to the hole so that the 30 yards has meaning. So it's 30 yards in the air, and then where do I land it on this practice green so that it'll run out to the hole? They all also said the same thing about the club, that it's 56 degrees, no lob wedge. The lob wedge is the worst club ever invented for the recreational player. And the reason for that is it doesn't have the rounded bottom that the sand wedge has. That's why in a bunker, using a lob wedge is a terrible idea, because it doesn't slide under the ball like a sand wedge 56 degrees will. So they all wanted 56 degrees, and they didn't want any shaft lean, no lean forward. Then all of a sudden it's become a gap wedge. You've just taken away your advantage, which is the rounded bottom. That's why you don't have to hit the ball cleanly from 30 yards. You play it like a bunker shot. You can aim an inch behind. You can aim 2 inches behind. You can aim almost 3 inches behind. If you let the club hang vertically, the way the manufacturer built it, and you make the little move, and the club now is going back to that vertical position, you're going to slide the club under the ball. It's not a clean hit. It's not a clean hit. You're sliding it under the ball, but you're still looking at the ball, but you know that you want to hit the ground first. Sam Snead was giving Ray Floyd a lesson one day. I was there in the 1970s on that hole. And Ray said, "What am I doing wrong?" He said, "Well, first of all, it's a 30-yard pitch." He said, "So you still have to turn." And he said, "You need to let the club hit the ground first. Hit the ground first." When Larry Rinker went on the tour and he made like 550 cuts or something, Payne Stewart said to him, and Ray Floyd said to him, "When you're hitting little chips and pitches, you want the club to hit the ground first. And so unless the circumstances really call for some kind of a shaft lean forward, which is very unusual, then you can just drop down a club if you're going to hit a 100-yard chip across a fairly flat green or even one with undulations. There's the sand wedge shot. You don't need to carry it that far. You can go ahead and hit a gap wedge or you can hit a pitching wedge, but just so the ball is going to come out a little lower and run a little further, but you don't need to lean the shaft forward. And if you lean the gap wedge forward, now it's a 9-iron. Now you've got a different shot." So best advice from a gaggle of teachers.
This was awesome.
About 1 inch to the right, let your arms drop, finish your swing.
That's gold. And I can't tell you how many times 100% recreational golfers, but tour players, I've stood and been in an event or something, they'll say, "Hey, my 30, 40-yard pitching hasn't been very good." And the first thing I'll say is, "Well, you're not doing any – there's no turn going back, right?" And then get a little turn going back. And one of my really good friends and great really good players on the Korn Ferry Tour, Rick Lamb, been playing well. He's close friends with Paul Azing. From living on that, from over in Bradenton. And Paul talked to him the same thing about 30, 40, 50 yard shots and about not leaning way too far on your lead side, but being more neutral so you can turn back and things like that. So, there, you know, I think it all comes from that generation. Like Paul was from what you're talking about, that generation of players. Also, where I think those generation of players all helped each other more, don't you think?
Yes, in the, especially in the, 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, through the early 60s, when there just began to be, for the first time, a reasonable amount of prize money.
Mm-hmm.
And Jack and Arnold both told me the same story, that when Jack joined the tour in 62, that they were playing a practice round. They were much better friends than people realize. They were not enemies or anything of the kind. And one day they were playing, and Arnold said to Jack, he said, "I noticed that you chip when you're on the fringe, when really you're going to have a much better result if you would putt instead of chip," he said, "because you'll find that your average putt from the fringe will be better than your average chip from the fringe, and you won't blade your putter, and you'll never hit one heavy and have to chip again, as you might sometimes." And so, yeah, they used to trade information all the time. There were guys on tour that other players would go to and thinking that they were a swing doctor. So, yes, until the money got out of control and everybody had an entourage and everybody was sequestered like they were a movie star and all of that nonsense, yeah, they were trading information. I mean, that's the thing about Rory McIlroy in the short game is I think he has the worst short game of any good player, really good player, who ever lived. I've never seen a player with more than one major who couldn't play from 100 yards and in. Why can't he? Well, lots of reasons in his case, because he's a complete head case. You know, he's like Colin Montgomery. He hears things that aren't there. He doubts himself. He thinks through stuff. He sometimes squeezes the putter so hard, I think the blood's going to come out of the top of the grip. He thinks too much. He's got a terrible feel. He has a terrible touch. And that's one of the reasons it makes him exciting players, because he's so good and has the biggest advantage anybody's ever had off of the teeing ground of anybody who's ever played golf, so that he's always hitting three less clubs in than everybody else. 7 iron to Pebbles 18th, 7 iron to the 15th at Augusta National, which was the best shot he hit that day in the final round. And yet from 60 yards and in, he's like a 30 handicapper. How about the shot he hit on 13? He had 60 yards into a pin as big as a hula hoop. It's a downhill lie. It's a side hill lie. You can't really see it that well on TV. To a slightly uphill pin. Nobody would go at that pin. Nobody would go at that pin, especially when you're winning the golf tournament at that point. You play 30 feet to the left. He just goes brain dead. You know, and you got all these people now talking about, you know, he's the greatest that is, he's the greatest that. He's not. He's not even the number one player in the world. Scottie Scheffler is. Scottie's winning by like 10 shots today. And, at least. And Scottie's been number one since 2022, which is longer in total than all of the times that Rory was ranked as number one. He's not the player of the year. He's not the best player on tour. He may have the most talent, but like a lot of golfers, he wasn't given everything. And that's why only a few guys were who were able to make it happen. Bobby Jones, he got everything. Hogan got everything. When people say he couldn't putt, Sam Snead looked at me and said, well, how do you think he won 9 majors? He was the greatest putter on fast greens that anybody ever saw. Yeah, did he have trouble when he lost one of his eyes basically in the accident and couldn't see anymore and then he got old really quick? Yeah, he had trouble pulling the club back. But when he was in his prime and he was still able to win majors through 53, he was you can't win if you're not going to make your 6 footers. And so Jack got everything. People say he wasn't a great wedge player. Really? Show me one miss over the course of his entire career at any time ever. What they meant was he didn't hit it as close as Lee did, but Lee hit it closer than anybody in history. I said to Jack once, people always teased you about your chipping and pitching. And he said, well, I never practiced them because I never had to. He said, I hit 16 greens around. He said, Trevino hit 16 greens around. And he said, I knew if I was going to miss 2 greens, I could certainly chip it to 10 feet. And he said, the chances of my missing putts from 10 feet are absolutely zero. He says, no way I'm going to miss a 10-footer. I don't care what it's for. Tom Weisskopf told me the story that he and Jack were paired in best ball in the Ryder Cup. And they get to the first green. And Jack's got a 15-footer up the hill for a birdie. Tom, on the same line from 10 feet, has the same putt, but from 5 feet closer, up the same hill for birdie. So Jack said, pick up your marker. And Tom said, what are you talking about? And Jack said, pick up your marker, rack your cue. I've got this. And he stepped up and knocked in the 15-footer. That's confidence. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what Rory McIlroy does not have. He is so uncertain about everything. That bogey into 18 was one of the sloppiest, worst, biggest jokes ever. And then he misses the bunker shot. Then he misses the putt. And Jim Nance, of course, who wants to date him, went ahead and said, and now we go to a playoff. Instead of, oh my God. I mean, it was a disgrace. And he was lucky enough to hit a great, put himself in position to hit that wedge shot over again. And he made the most of it. And he's only one of 6 guys who have won all 4 major championships. He's the worst player of the group. And it's also true that Annika Sorenstam has won all 4 majors. But the difference between Gene Sarazen and Rory and Gary Player is that Jones was also the best player of his time and won all 4 majors. Hogan was the best player of his time and won all 4 majors. Jack was the best player of his time and won all 4 majors. Tiger was the best player of his time and won all 4 majors. Annika was the best player of his time and won all 4 majors. Rory's not number one now, and he's not going to turn out to have been the best player of his time. He's closer to 40 than he is to 30. And the guy who got caught him for a playoff is closer to 50. And so, in my view, we're seeing the end, not the beginning of some explosive run of majors from Rory McIlroy, because Scottie Scheffler's a better player, and Rory McIlroy was finally able to, all credit to him, pull it off and win the Masters under incredible pressure internally and externally, and a guy who's not confident, and his mind is all over the place. So congratulations to him. He's not the best player of his time, and he's not number one in the world right now.
All right, give me another teacher. We got to get one or two more good teachers in here and lessons to learn.
Okay, how about Manuel De La Torre?
Oh, wow.
He was, he was a favorite and a cult favorite, and people used to go up to Milwaukee, I think is where he was, and take lessons from him. And he had a very unusual swing philosophy, which was you swing the club up with your hands, and then you give the responsibility of the downswing to your arms. Now, that's not an easy concept to put into practice. It's easy to understand, right? I'm going to swing it up with my hands, but then I'm going to let my arms be in charge of the downswing. But he had a way of talking you through it and getting your arms to be soft so that, in his view, the hands were the thing that made the belly button go, but he didn't talk about the belly button. But he believed that if you started with the hands, that everything else would respond to it in the correct order. Coming down, he didn't want you to be handsy because, like almost every player that he would teach, they would dissipate the energy at impact. All of it would go at the bottom. What Manuel wanted you to do was to gather pace through the hitting area, not expend the energy. He wanted you to gather pace. And he felt the only way for you to do that was to control things with your arms, knowing that the body would in turn respond to it. Jim Flick, he felt exactly the same way. He believed that the arms were the masters of the swing, and that if you swung them properly and you learned to do it on, he wouldn't call it plane, but for our discussion, plane is what he was talking about. If you were going to go through the same correct space in the air, Jim believed that everything else would then fall into place, and you too would finish in a full balanced position if the arms led the swing. And he was talking about soft arms. He wasn't talking about limp arms, because then it's not a sport anymore. You've got to have a certain amount of pressure. Tommy Bolt was a great friend of mine and a great teacher. And he was one of the guys that, well, Hogan and Bolt used to look at each other's swings. And it was Hogan who changed Bolt's grip from very strong to very neutral. And Tommy felt that the important thing was, as Hogan taught him, is when you're at the top, you need a firm hold on that club. He said, I'm not talking about squeezing it to death, but he said, it is an instrument of power, and you must hold the club firmly with the last three fingers in particular of your left hand if you are a right-handed player. You really had to be in position there. And when we used to play golf, that was pretty much the only thing he ever told me. I was breaking 80 when I was playing with Tommy and playing good golf for a recreational player. I played really good with Arnold. And one day I was playing with Sam and with Tommy, just the three of us. And they were both about 83 or 4 and could both play still and break 70. And they both used to give me 10 shots, which I thought was going to be really fair because I figured they'd shoot par and I'd shoot 75. That is not what happened. They were shooting 66. They were shooting 65. And Sam's swing flaw would expose itself on the tee. He would come over the top, which was actually all players come over the top, really good ones, by one godillionth of an inch. They don't do this drop down to the inside nonsense. They're on the same plane going back and forth. And a lot of them are slightly over. You just can't see it because it's so infinitesimal. But Jones certainly was, and Jack certainly was, and Tiger certainly was. It just appeared as though they were exactly on the plane. But the rotation of the body moved the upper body just forward enough that the club was not exactly retracing the path that it took back. And Tommy watched Sam pull a drive into the left rough. And Tommy looked at Sam because it was a bad shot for Sam Snead, one of the greatest players ever lived. He said, Sam, not a good swing. It's not a good move. And they would start to curse each other. I never heard such eloquent stringing together of the worst language you ever heard. The names that they would call each other, and then how overrated they were as players, and you know, that Snead never won the U.S. Open, which is, of course, the only major that Tommy did win. And Tommy said, that's because the other stuff is for pussies. He said, the U.S. Open, he said, that's for real men. And they used to fight all the way around the course. They would never concede a putt. I don't care if it was on. If Tommy would hit a 50-foot putt and it stopped half in the hole and half out of the hole, Sam would just sit there with his arms folded and make Tommy walk all the way across the green to go ahead and tap in the last quarter inch of the putt. And Sam believed, again, in the belly button. Tommy believed in the belly button. And Tommy was very big about when you're at the top and you've got a firm hold of the club without squeezing it to death, that's the moment, and Byron Nelson said this to me too, he said, that's when you have this zillionth of a second where you get it all together. He said, there's got to be some kind of a feeling of a pause at the top before you start down. It's not a continuous motion. And every single player that we've just referenced and every single teacher that we've referenced all said exactly the same thing in their own way, that there comes a moment when you've completed your turn and you're in position that everything comes together and then you go. You don't have time to think about things. It's a sensation. I'm in position, but you don't even have time to think I'm in position. It's your body saying, ready now. Just like a swimmer, you know, when they say ready, set, and the arms go back and they're in position to go. They know when they're in position to go, and then the gun goes off and they go. Same thing with the swing. I know I'm in position. Now I can go.
Peter, this was awesome. I appreciate you taking the time on a Sunday afternoon. It was fun for me to sit and relive it. And I appreciate you always taking time for me. Hopefully I'd love to do this again. Maybe I can stop and have lunch one time coming through as well. And we can take another
one. Well, I'll do this with you anytime. All I got to do is just, you know, find a nice painting behind me in a chair and put on a golf shirt and make sure I've shaved and I can do this. So